Hey everybody, thanks for joining us this week on Code Chat. Glad to have you. I am Jeremy Foster. As always, you can find me online at codefoster.com and on Twitter at codefoster. And my guest this week is Mark Michaelis. How are you doing, Mark?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Good to talk to you, Jeremy.
Yeah. We've got an interesting question that we have posed and that we've had some good conversation about, and that is, why in some ways is it still harder for a software developer to get started with a project, especially if you're on the beginning side of software development? If you're a student developer or you've just kind of gotten into this recently, and you look at your options, you look at how you're gonna get started, and there's not a clear, easy entry point. Yeah. Like, well, you just go to this webpage and there it is.
Yeah, it's weird. I look back at sort of my career and sort of think, you know, when I started doing software development, I started with Microsoft Access, which was this crazy easy app. I could just start it up and I could bet tables in the database, and there was fidelity between my UI and my database, and I didn't have to think about entity framework and whether I had DTOs or any of that kind of stuff. I just sort of wrote the app and I could produce it and publish it. And today Access has a terrible black eye. You would never build an app with Access today. But it was so easy, and yet we go do web apps today, and you've got to think about a myriad of technologies. You don't even know which framework to get started with. And I think that's a shame. We've got so much complexity and so many options, and those options we sort of have fought for. We wanted to have those.
Yeah.
But now we're in a world where it makes it very complex. It makes it hard to make choices.
Yeah, there's obviously these two things that in play. There's the ease of doing it, and then the power that you have as a developer, right? And when you have an open framework, like you're just given the .NET framework, or you're just given the web stack, you know,
right,
you've got a browser with JavaScript engine in it. If you're just given that, then you have the ultimate of power, but you also don't exactly know where to get started. You're going to have to go get, you're going to be insane if you don't go get a framework of some kind.
Sure,
you're
going
to be insane if you're going to try to do MVVM without an MVVM framework or a web platform without, you know, finding a web.
But even that part, I mean, you start out, you want to do the MVVM framework, but which one?
Yeah.
I mean, the choices are so huge. And so we get stagnated, even as architects, we get stagnated of which one should I choose, and is it going to have the longevity that this customer is investing $1 million here, and are we going to give them the right choice and it's not going to change next week? So we've gone and moved into the world, and ASP.NET 5 is pushing us to go do this, to give us the flexibility. But the choices now are, what do we do? Because we have so many choices, where before it was Visual Studio, new project, and we went off to the races with web forms. We're moving, and now it's a lot harder to make those choices. And the criticalness, you feel the burden of, oh my goodness, what if I choose the wrong one?
Yeah, you know, right, absolutely. You get a little bit of anxiety there. And you talk to somebody that uses a different one, and he'll make you feel absolutely insane for having, or ashamed for having chosen the one
that you did. You're so behind, you know? You chose Angular, what were you thinking?
Yeah, what are you doing? Right, what are you doing with that?
Exactly.
Why in the world are you using handlebars for your templating engine?
Exactly. You're still just jQuery? Come on, why are you stuck with just jQuery? There's so many better things, you know? So
can we speculate on why it is this way now? I mean, I talk to audiences a lot, and a lot of times I'm talking to student developers or beginner developers, and they say, like, how do I get started? And I go, how am I supposed to answer that question? There's 47 different ways to get started. It depends on what you want to do. It depends on what kind of a developer you want to be. I mean, there are fundamental divides between the Ruby guy and the Node guy and the .NET guy, you know?
Right.
They're not even necessarily always the same culture.
Yeah.
And so why is that? Why is it? Because everybody's been building out different frameworks that work their own way, that now we have more options than we did?
I think part of it. The other thing that's true is where none of us are satisfied. It's still too hard. Once you choose a particular one, it's still too hard to get that just to work. And it doesn't do the full fidelity of the app. So I'm going to go choose something that's in the JavaScript world, but it doesn't get me all the way down to the databases, to the low level as I want. Or it still leaves me with an impedance mismatch between the database and my UI.
Yeah.
So we choose each of these frameworks, and they each solve one particular part of the entire architecture, but they don't solve the breadth. So that's one of the problems. I think the other thing is each person comes along and thinks they can engineer it better than the last person. And we have this sort of, I will do it better if I write it myself. And so that's, you know, even that is not a broad statement. You can't say that across the board. We all sort of want to start with somebody else's work and build on top of that, but then we can't choose which work. And then we choose one, and we're like, oh, it's not quite got it. Let me go ahead and switch. And they switch to another framework. And so that's a hard problem, because we never feel like we've got the most recent stuff. And so we're either going to choose to write it on top of what we got, or else we're going to choose to, well, let me try this one. This didn't quite make it, so I'm going to go investigate another one. So we have projects where you can imagine developers want to get started and start writing code, and then they spend the first 3 weeks trying to choose which framework they're going to use, and that assumes if they know what platform. I mean, that assumes they know they're going to build a Microsoft or Node.js or what they're going to do. And so they've got that first choice of which platform they're going to choose. They may be doing analysis in terms of choosing the platform. Then once they've chosen the platform, they're going to figure out which frameworks they're going to reference or which NuGet package they're going to use. Today, even if you choose Microsoft, right, is it ASP.NET 5? Is it ASP.NET 4 with MVC? Is it going to be choosing web forms? And they got all these choices that are facing them today that make that choice complex.
And you know, every time I'm introduced to a new framework or I go explore one and it solves some of those pains that I've had in the past, there's something in me, this kind of irrational hope, like this is going to be the silver bullet. This one's going to fix it all. Yeah. And when they release this in 3 weeks or whatever, this is going to be the framework that I can use to write anything I need to, and it's going to be fast and it's going to be flexible, and everybody else is going to start using it, and we won't have this pain anymore. And you know what? I've been developing software for 20 years, and I've had that hope with almost every release of every framework over the years.
But you go back to the irony of this. I mean, we go back to the irony of something like Access. We didn't have any choices.
Right.
I mean, it was, you know, you went and literally created, you went to the forms folder and you added a form, right? Mm-hmm. And then you said which tables you're going to bind to, and you created a table. And you didn't need anything else. You didn't need to write any code. You just got it. And then you got a little bit more adventurous. You say, oh, let me just write a code for this particular column, or let me go ahead and create a view, create a report. I mean, all of that stuff was right there because there were no choices. And in the end, you got something with which you were satisfied with for an IT-based application, you know, within your IT department or within your company. And today, we've demanded choices. We want more flexibility. We want to be able to do more stuff. What happens in Access where we couldn't do with the right calendar control? We were stuck. And so we said, hey, we want to go ahead and open up, allow us to do anything. But that demand for being able to do anything has resulted in the fact that we have too many choices. And then I think the other thing, for those of us who have got a lot of experience, we are driven by the idea that we can achieve excellence. And we really want to get it right. We want to get it perfect. And we start a new project. We're like, I'm going to get this project right. And I'm going to solve all the problems. I'm going to solve world hunger right here. And that demand itself to reach excellence and get the whole thing solved causes us to become somewhat paralyzed in the search for what is the right solution, the right way to go.
Yeah. Okay, so it's in some ways it's harder now. In some ways it's harder for these beginning developers. In what ways is it better? In what ways is the world of software development, maybe specifically toward, if we're talking about beginners, in what ways is it better than it used to be?
Well, I think for one, I mean, clearly, when we say better since when, you know, look at sort of our generation when we were starting to learn, you know, you're like 20 maybe, so, okay, maybe not that much. But if you go back, right, the internet has certainly changed from when we started doing development. But the big thing now that's recently happened is the availability of online tutorials is crazy high.
Oh, yeah.
Do you really need to go to get a CS degree? Do you only look for developers on your team that have CS degrees? The reality is, pretty much anyone can go learn and start writing code, and they can go through wizards that are just an hour long or 2 hour of code kinds of stuff, or they can go to do a week long course and cover a whole breadth of a particular technology and get started. So the ability to start because of the availability of tutorials is crazy good. It's a crazy good world. The problem, and maybe it's the problem that we face as engineers today, is they don't help us make the choice. So we, right from the start, the most common question a beginning developer asks is, how do I get started? And your hesitancy is sort of, well, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Do you want to do IoT? Do you want to go do Node stuff? Do you want to go do Microsoft stuff? Even that question is beyond the can of those developers to know what to, how to get started. So although there's tons of tutorial, there's no tutorial out there that says, hey, you should go learn Node.js first, and then you should go ahead and improve your JavaScript skills by adding a framework on top of it, or start learning CSS and HTML. There's nothing that says do it in this order, and there's nothing that is actually right. There's no right answer to this question.
That's right.
And so I think it is a great world because you can go learn about technologies just by going online and learning the particular thing. The question is, what do you learn, and in what order do you learn it? And then I still believe, and I think this is a good thing today, that there's a myriad of ways to get mentors to help you, but I still believe we really need somebody to sit alongside and code together. And if you go back all the way to sort of extreme programming where they insist on doing paired programming, that is one of the most valuable ways for you to jump up in technology and sort of streamline your development.
Have you heard about this modern trend in, I forgot the name of the exact program, but somebody will, instead of just writing code all day on their own, they'll stream it to this service and then other people can watch them write code, which is, it ends up being kind of a discipline for you because you know that people are watching you.
Yeah,
and then they're learning as you go through real life scenarios, not just like the happy path that you end up editing and putting online, but this is like when you run into the problem and you spend 2 hours beating your head against the wall because you got your connection string wrong. You know, people get to see all of that as well.
Wow, I'm not, are you comfortable doing that? Are you ready?
I'm not ready.
You know, it's interesting because I think there's areas. I look at sort of my experience in speaking, and I love starting from new project.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
me
I just
too.
Think that's the best way to go, and you know, go all the way back to sort of Don Box and his sort of. The way that he started out, and you sort of felt like there was no magic. There's nothing behind his, you know, behind his back that he's sort of pulling out. You started from scratch. And for me, learning that was key, sort of being able to do those demos on the fly right from the start, because it meant I didn't just know how to use it. I knew if something went wrong, what was going wrong, because I knew how it worked internally.
Yeah.
So it's more than just how to use it, but what is it doing underneath the covers? I think the other thing that is really makes a difference for the beginner is trying to insist or force on them the discipline of unit testing. I feel like there's no better way to learn the details of something's working than to write a unit test for what the code you're writing.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not talking about quality, and I'm not trying to argue for TDD, or those are other discussions that we can have. I'm really just saying from a learning perspective, when you write a test corresponding to the code you're writing, you suddenly discover that it doesn't do what you expect it to do, and you've just exposed the whole depth of what's going on in that control or in that algorithm that allows you to actually understand it better. And it's really hard to get a beginning programmer. Like, you know, I look at my high school son and say, oh, you got to go do TDD. He's totally distracted by, I want a form to appear on the screen and I want graphics on it. He couldn't care about unit testing. But if there's some way you could get that unit testing to happen, that's when you can really start to get the depth of understanding.
It feels analogous to mathematical proofs. You know how like you feel like you understand a mathematical concept and then your professor says, okay, you need to do the proof behind that. And you go, oh, I guess there are some nuances of this that I don't understand.
Yes.
And likewise, there might be some nuances of this to this requirement that I don't understand, just don't get. I didn't realize it.
Yeah, so I think that's a really helpful method to learn stuff that just gets the developers sort of go the next level of depth. And I find, you know, when we do interview questions for IntelliTech, the company, we will literally give people and say, hey, go ahead and write whatever it is, tic-tac-toe, it doesn't matter. And the only requirement is you get to specify how much you're going to do. In other words, I don't insist that you write, you know, AI and for tic-tac-toe, anything like that. You tell me how much you're going to do, you deliver it, and it's got to be unit tested. And so they may just write the board. I don't care. Well, if you try to write a console app and do unit testing for the console app to just display the board, that's crazy hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so having them set the bar of how much they're going to do and then write the unit test corresponding to me, that tells me that they don't just know how to write the code, they actually know how to test the code, which means they probably know what's going on underneath the covers. And that sort of sets a different level of standards for the kind of person we want to hire.
There's an analogy that I like to draw that my intention is for this to be encouraging for the beginner students that are, you know, that are trying to break into this and saying, this all looks so huge and so hard. And that is to music. Now, I have a great appreciation for music, but I can't say that I'm musical. I don't produce,
I don't
express in the musical medium, and it's only because I don't spend the time that I know that it would take. And I remember in college I took a guitar class, and at the end of this, like, you know, 12-week class, I was like, I'm still not a guitar player.
Sure.
I'm frustrated by this, and it's because I didn't put in the practice.
Yeah.
I did not spend more than a half hour a week, actually doing the notes. And when I've seen people that are really good at guitar, it's because they play guitar for like 6 hours a day.
Yes.
And it's because they love it.
They love doing it.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so for me, like, I have no problem staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning working on coding concepts because I love it. And people just have to know on the entry point that they're not going to be able to just kind of dabble around the fringes of software development and somehow be a software developer. They have to love it, and they have to go through. I always tell people that you've got education, which is great. then you've got experience,
yes.
and then you've got inspiration.
Yes.
And the experience part of it is, so the education is always the happy path. Here's what works, here's what works,
yes.
here's what
yes.
works.
Yes, exactly.
The
right.
experience is the opposite. It's here's what doesn't work,
yes.
here's what doesn't work. And we
yes.
have to hit our heads against that wall of, this doesn't work, I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning yes. trying to get it to work. That really teaches us a lot.
I totally agree. I love the analogy. I think the music analogy is great because the first day when you start to do music, you're just playing one, I'm assuming piano, guitar, it doesn't matter. You're just playing one or two notes and you could just sort of stab through. But you get after sort of a month and you're still not really enjoying it because
yeah.
you're not playing
yeah.
anything that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's the exact same problem with code. And you go through this phase of, it is just pure grit, just pure
yep.
discipline to say,
yep.
I'm going to keep going. And then you get to the level where you're starting to create stuff, but you hit a snag.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the discipline to force yourself through that, even though
mm-hmm.
you may be working for 3 hours on just trying to get a 10-line method to work because you don't understand. I'm sure none of this happens for you guys today, but
your code always
right. So just trying to go through that, and what people who code and people who don't, the people who don't code don't understand about the people that do, is that we actually enjoy that problem solving,
yeah,
that battling,
right.
that wrestling.
That's right.
You know, and frequently, you know, the solution is just go to bed because we just need that time for our brains to think through. But assuming, or having people around us that we can ask, but you have to be willing to battle.
Yeah.
And I remember a transition for me one time where I sort of thought, oh, it's just a bug in the software. It's Microsoft's fault. Clearly, it's a Microsoft bug. I'm going to call Microsoft support and get them. And it wasn't until I got to maturity level to realize it is not Microsoft's fault. 99% of the time, it's actually something I'm doing wrong or a scenario that Microsoft hasn't encountered.
Yeah.
And so there's different sort of stages of learning. And I sort of think their maturity. It's only when you realize how much you don't understand that you're actually able to start appreciate, okay, I just don't understand it enough. I need to investigate it more. And we need to be willing to wrestle and to learn. I think the other thing that's really worthwhile for those new people is sort of explaining the breadth that you are always learning. And one of the challenges, going back to the initial part of the conversation of what makes us hard, the reality is it is changing. It's no longer measured in the next release of Visual Studio. It's changing next week. What framework you chose today, there's going to be a new one out tomorrow. Even once you've chosen a framework like Angular or Entity Framework, the next major version of that is a paradigm shift in many ways.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to go from JavaScript writing to TypeScript writing and, you know, Angular Framework or something like that. These things are significant paradigm shifts that sort of have to reboot us and have to get us started. And
mm-hmm.
that's frustrating for those of us who are in the industry because we have to relearn, but it's also an entry point for the beginner. It's a way for them to go and say, I don't need to know all that stuff before.
Yeah.
I don't need to
that's
know COM in order to start programming.net
right.
because the world was rebooted and the whole platform changed. That allows those new beginners to get back in and enter at a later stage when us, you know, old guys have got 40 years of experience.
If I could quantify all the things that I know from however many years ago that have zero relevance
that are just
now.
Wasting brain space,
yeah, exactly.
right?
I wish I could just get that out.
Yeah, I wrote a I remember writing a 1,000-page COM Plus book. I'm like, what the heck was I thinking? Well, back then, right, that was a big
sense.
Deal, right?
And you're so, probably really excited.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And now it's so irrelevant. But it was 1,000 pages, right? I mean, it's crazy to think how much work and how much understanding. And we had to know all these interfaces and IO known. And we just have to know. We had memorized the GUID for these kinds of things. And today it's completely and utterly irrelevant for the vast majority of stuff.
Did you
still common?
Did you really memorize a GUID?
Yeah, but it was only to show off.
Oh, I see.
You didn't need to know the GUID. Yeah, that was just to show off. At the end of the day, technology is changing fast enough that we don't have to know. I remember in college they said you got to go take an assembler class. And I don't know how I skipped that requirement because somehow I graduated with my master's without learning assembler.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is people today never have to even think in assembly. It's completely irrelevant unless they're writing the compiler.
Mm-hmm.
It's not significant. So,
now, Mark, you've got a company called Intellitect, right?
Yes, Intellitect.
And you work out of Spokane?
Based in Spokane.
Eastern Washington.
Places, yeah.
Now, you guys have a contribution that's really relevant here. You guys have a project that's kind of a, here's a framework that you can use to get started in a bit of a modern UI, right?
Yeah, so we're just starting out. I mean, it's out there. It's an open source. You can actually go get it. It's called the Journey Framework, and it's basically trying to do what Azure is doing in their UI.
Okay.
And there's a lot of sort of discussion about how valuable that UI is. A lot of people didn't like it at first.
Yeah.
And so it you have to choose your application as to where it applies versus doesn't apply. So I don't think it's a universal or change all your apps to do this. But if that UI makes sense to you, if you need sort of a wizard-driven kind of framework, or you need something that's using MVC but has the ability to sort of drill in and then drill back out again, that kind of feel that Azure has, we said, hey, what would you do to build an app like Azure? And so we built a journey framework, leveraging the same terms that Microsoft is using in Azure. We built a journey framework that is just getting you started to get that UI up based on an MVC approach. It's a spy app in the sense that that Azure is a spy app, but at the end of the day, it's actually MVC underneath the covers.
So you're just destroying the expectation right away that this is a silver bullet framework.
Oh, I think we've spent the last 20 minutes doing that. I mean, by no means am I saying that. It has a specific scenario. You've got to understand what the scenario is and apply it to that particular case, and then it makes sense, right, for sure. This is not... you know, the best thing since Swiss cheese. We're obviously still improving it. It's making progress. We've got it deployed. You know, we've got customers that are using it right now. And it's open source, so you can go in and hack away and change it and make it different. You can go and fork the library. At the end of the day, the goal for us is to solve our own problem, and you can see whether that fits your need. But it just focuses, it allows you to do sort of jumpstart. It's really a jumpstart, right? That's the best word, is to jumpstart your development, to build on top of what is going on right now.
Well, the cheese might be another good analogy. You know, we're in a world where there's lots of different kinds of cheese, and this is just one good cheese.
Yes,
but
it's
definitely not the cheese to
end
them all.
And it keeps moving, right? At the end of the day, somebody keeps moving the cheese. Right?
So let's take a look. Let's jump to my screen here. I've just got Visual Studio 2015 community open. So can you walk me through creating a new journey?
Sure. So just get a new project.
Okay.
So file new project. Let's build an MVC app.
I hope nobody minds if I don't tend to use the mouse all that much.
That's
so
okay.
I'll try to go at a relative rate though. Okay, so I'm just creating a C# web app here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just using ASP.NET. That's fine, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Let's choose MVC. That's great.
Okay.
And we don't need to host in Azure this time, and we'll click OK.
Okay.
Now, in the framework, you can actually go ahead and reference just the journey library if you like. But we've also got a jumpstart NuGet package. The jumpstart sort of adds sort of basic stuff to give you an outline of what's available. So if you just want the raw code and just the raw, I guess we call it platform or API, includes the UI, then you would reference just the framework. But if you want to do the jumpstart part, you're going to go ahead and reference jumpstart. So let's go ahead and right-click on your references, add NuGet package.
You want me to do add reference, or do you want me to do manage NuGet
packages? Yeah, that's great.
This is
so
good?
Let's
okay.
go to, no, you want to add a ref. Yeah, you can search there, so your screen's different size. So let's go ahead and search for Journey. And then you can see the IntelliTech Journey Jumpstart. So it's dependent, has a dependency on the IntelliTech Journey.
So it's going to pull them both in?
It is, just as a really good.
Okay,
let's choose the Jumpstart,
Okay. All those parameters look good?
Yeah, we're good. We're not.
All right, install.
We don't need to customize it now. So the lead engineer on this is Grant Erickson. And he's working continually to sort of improve this with customers in terms of what they're looking.
Okay.
So at this point,
looks like it's done.
Yeah, go ahead and run it. Control F5.
Okay.
And again, remember, Jumpstart is going to put a whole bunch of stuff that you may not want
in
your
app,
it's demo, but you could easily modify it to start
making
what
you
want.
Okay, there you go. I love those.
So this is out of the box that you normally get. So we'll change the URL. Let's do /journey.
It doesn't look any different.
Yeah, that was impressive, right?
I mean,
this is impressive stuff. Yeah. So let's put Journey on the end and hit Enter. And
there
now you can see, hey, we're starting to see that first part of your journey if you're going out in sort of Azure.
Back up a second. For people that haven't used Azure, what's a journey?
Oh, great. Good question. So the whole idea is that when you're working with an app, you begin on a particular page, and then you can sort of drill into more detail on what that's going on. So you can imagine sort of the Outlook kind of app in the past. In the Outlook kind of app, you sort of went to the calendar tab. And then on the calendar, you could see the calendar, and then you could double-click on an appointment, and that would open up sort of a modal dialogue that you'd start interacting with. Well, through the UI excellence of the Azure team and the research that they did, they said, hey, what if we want to get away from modal, for sure, obviously. Let's go ahead and not even do lightbox kind of apps. Let's go ahead and sort of allow you to move to the right side of your screen as you drill in, and then move back as you drill out. So the whole idea here is you would go ahead and click on calendar or the calendar icon. In the left here, you can see some icons, and that would give you the calendar. And then once you go from the calendar, you can go and select a particular appointment, and that would move you a little bit further right. Now you can look at the details of the calendar. And then maybe in the details of the calendar, you want to modify how often it appears, or the
recurrence.
Recurrence, mm-hmm. Thank you, I was looking for that word. The recurrence, you can drill into that, but you're still always within the context on your screen of what's happening. So the same kind
of
thing.
So they're like threads of progress.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, great word. It's a thread of progress, but you never lose context. I think the key here is that you never lose the context of where you're at. And you can drill in and drill back out.
Because this is kind of if you're a developer, you understand the concept of the stack, and how I move down the stack back up it, or you understand the concept of a thread. Because I know in Azure, these journeys, this journey that you're on, including all of your temporary state data that you've typed into the field so far, is all saved. And so if you jump over instantly and do something else, it's okay, because your other journey, you can always go back to it and pick up right where you left off.
That's one of the key things, is if you look at the icons on the left, the same as when you were in Outlook, you could change your context, but when you go back to the previous icon, or previous part of your tree hierarchy, the context is exactly the same way as it was. So you don't, even when you switch to completely different locations in the app, you don't want to lose the context of where you were before that.
So let's see these panes actually stack on each other.
So here, you got a home, and then we're just putting sort of some icons there on the screen right there in the first part. So if you click on one of those things right there, you'll see, it's just loading, click OK, it's fine.
Okay.
And so at this point, you'll see now we've jumped into the context of that one thing we're doing, and we got a form here we can edit, and we can go ahead and start doing that edit, and then you can continue to drill into stuff and go further into the framework.
Oh, look at that.
As far as we're going to go. So I don't think there's anything to edit on that one, but you get the idea of sort of where it's going to
be. Oh, look at that. This is nice. So small, busy stuff is going to open in a subsequent kind of step.
Yeah.
But large, busy stuff is going to say, hey, hold on a second. You're going to have to wait for us.
So now we didn't put anything behind that, so you're not seeing that happen, but you get the idea.
This is
out of the screen, wizard something up.
Yeah.
And so as you go put in structure, like you would with MVC, so we've still got the whole views and models, and but all of those things are the underlying structure to how it then appears and renders on the screen, sort of leveraging that.
Well, this is great. So this is something that, like, your group, are you using this for some of your projects?
Yeah.
And you said, hey, let's just make this an open source contribution.
Yeah, so even to the credit, we actually worked with Idaho Power on this. And to their credit, they said, hey, we're okay about going ahead.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Available. So one of the things that we're sort of working to, and lots of customers, it doesn't make sense for. We've got stuff, customers that are doing proprietary work. But where can we saying, hey, if Microsoft, this multi-billion dollar company, can start giving this stuff away, we should consider that as part of contributing to the community and allowing other people. It's actually to our advantage. In some sense, there's a bar here somewhere, but hey, if we can go do this, then other people can go ahead and contribute. They can leverage it and use it, but they may find good ideas. We don't have the corner on best stuff, and so they can contribute that and help us.
Yeah, your product can just get better, and your name can get out. You know, as somebody who's, altruistic enough to say, I want to contribute to the community.
We're in this very weird world, right? As software engineers, we can go out and earn lots of money writing software.
Yep.
And yet, if you wanted to go write an app, like a consumer app, for your phone or something today, it's crazy competitive because so many people are doing it for free. And so we're in this world where we can make, a fair amount of money in our careers and doing stuff like that, just writing code. We can also go do a whole bunch of stuff for free. And frequently, those two things are in conflict because somebody else has decided to do it in their spare time for free, and somebody else has decided to do it for revenue and income.
Yeah.
And it's this weird world we live in today.
If I put my consumer hat on, I love open source software and free projects. I love being able to just go download some free apps and stuff. But there's a set of apps that I don't want to be free because I want this company to have an R&D team that's coming out with excellence for the next iteration. Yes. Some of my favorites, I love Vegas by Sony. It's a video editing suite.
Yes, I know that
I love Fusion 360 by Autodesk.
Yep.
And these companies, they've got a really massive team of people that are coming up with some pretty amazing things. And if they were merely open source contributions and didn't have those resources, then those amazing software packages wouldn't exist.
It is definitely attention. And I don't think anybody has figured this out. Clearly, Microsoft is blazing a trail. Not newly. I think obviously people have done that. Linux has been doing this for longer than most people. But it's not something that's been figured out, right? It's not everyone's like, oh, for sure, this is the way to make money, and you can go ahead and long-term, long-term revenue stream coming in from this. It's not figured out, and people argue vehemently on both sides, right? I mean, they have strong opinions, and there's strong evidence that it works on both sides, and so each sort of business practice is having to decide, okay, what's going to work for us and what makes sense for us. But in our sense, it was, hey, we got to build this anyway. And yeah. if other people can leverage it, we should make it available. And yeah. IntelliTect actually has a framework that each time we go into a customer, we have them to say, hey, if we build on stuff that's common, then that's going to be something that we continue to own so we can release it as open source yeah. if we want. If it's proprietary to your industry or your vertical, then you should, by all means, that's your code, you own it, you paid it for us sure. to go write it. But when anything is common, so we can say, hey, we're building this in the utility space, we're doing a lot of stuff in the utility space, or we're doing this in the medical space, that's yours. If it's in that specific yeah. space for your industry, that's your code. But if it spans it, hey, it's something we wrote in as part of the medical application, but we can use it in the utility space, that's common. Everybody can take use of that. And then you can get the advantage when what we write in the utility goes to the medical. And so
and also the advantage of if you use one of these libraries that's already been written,
yeah.
that's
yeah. And if you don't agree to do that, no problem, yeah. of course. So it's yeah. totally fine. But yeah. if you do, then you get, you know, all the yeah. legacy stuff that we have, you know, the that we've built, sort of yeah. reuse that.
Well, tell you what, we should wrap up, but I knew this was going to be a fun conversation.
It was fun. Thank you so much. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Okay. Yeah.
Cheers.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us on Code Chat every week. It's a lot of fun. We're going to have actually another conversation, so you'll see Mark again in the near future. But yeah, best of luck as you're tackling this problem of how to get started in learning software development and choosing a framework as you get going on greenfield projects or as you revamp your brownfield projects, whatever. But anyway, thank you for tuning into the show and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.